Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Today, I'm joined with David Dennis Jr. to discuss his book, The Movement Made Us. David is a senior writer at ESPN's Anscape and has had his work featured in Atlanta Magazine, The Atlantic, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and more. Dennis is the recipient of the 2021 American Mosaic Journalism Prize. He is a National Association of Black Journalists Salute to Excellence Award winner and was named one of the Root's 100 Most Influential African Americans of 2020. He currently lives in Georgia with his two children. The Movement Made Us is written in collaboration with his father, the civil rights veteran, David Dennis Sr., and the book is published by HarperCollins Press. Movement Made Us is a work of oral history and memoir that chronicles the civil rights movement of the 1960s and its legacy embodied in Black Lives Matter through the experiences of both David Dennis Sr. and David Dennis Jr. David, thank you so much for being on the show. So glad to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, I'd like to start by expressing how much I loved reading your book. It was just as powerful as it was insightful. And so, like, often when we think of the civil rights movement, we hear about the lives of prominent charismatic leaders. However, your text allows us to consider and even put into perspective how the movement impacted families of the activists. And so, like, with this being said, I'm curious about what motivated you to write the book. And also, could you elaborate a little bit on the title?
So I kind of always been interested in writing my dad's stories. I grew up listening to the stories, grew up hearing him and his friends and peers in the movement telling these, like, really theatrical stories, honestly. And so I wanted to one day put them on paper and could never quite figure out how to do it until... I read The Things They Carried, which is a war book, and it's about a bunch of short stories. So I said I wanted to write these short stories about my dad. And that was really where it was. Around 2016, Donald Trump gets elected, and it makes me really start to evaluate where we are as a country and where we've been and where we've come from. And I thought it'd be the perfect time to actually tell dad's stories. So that's really where it came from. So about 2017, we started working on, you know, getting these stories on paper and trying to figure this thing out. And that was the crux of it. That's where the book came to be. The movement made us. I was really trying to write a book about who all this movement impacted. Right. So the us is about everybody. It's about this country, how the movement shaped this country, how the movement shaped the people in the, you know, who were in the movement, and also my dad and I, how it shaped our relationships, how it shaped father-son relationship, parent-child relationship, all those things. So I wanted it to have sort of this double, triple meaning.
Oh, thank you. No, I love that. And so, like, you talk about how at one point your dad felt like the movement saved his life, but you felt differently about the movement and how it shaped yours. So could you talk a little bit more about this, and how has your dad's activism impacted you growing up and just you into your adulthood as well?
Yeah, growing up, I had a interesting relationship to the movement because I felt like it was to blame for some of the issues my dad was having. The travel, the distance, things like that, his the decisions he was making. I felt like the movement the residual damage of the movement, the things that happened to him were negatively impacting us. And I had a lot of anger about it. And it wasn't until writing the book and sort of understanding where he's coming from, what happened with him, the things that, you know, that we've been through, and the beauty behind it, that I really started to appreciate it more. But I did have this sort of view and this anger about what this movement had done.
Thank you for that. So in some ways, the book has been like therapeutic for you and your father. And so, like, could you, I guess, also talk about, like, how has it shaped y'all's relationship going forward?
Yeah, so I think a lot of parents, a lot of fathers and sons, a lot of parents, they end up in a situation where they reach this place where they just don't talk about things, right? My dad and I were kind of there. I mean, we talked about stuff. We reached this place where we were fine. Like, I think we were good. For us to come together and make this book, we had to be some sort of good in some sort of way. But there was a lot of things that were unspoken, a lot of things we hadn't said to each other. And this book sort of forced us to have those conversations. And so it took our relationship to a new, different level that's better than I had ever, honestly, I thought was possible. Like, I thought we were fine and we were just going to be fine. And he was going to go on and not really talk about it. But to be at that next level, that space where things are even better than before is a beautiful gift that this book has given us.
I absolutely love that. And that's powerful within itself, right?
Right.
The book has done for like you all's relationship as well. And so what did you know about your father's story before even collaborating on this book? And then was there anything that like just surprised you or shocked you while you were doing this research?
So, yeah, I'd known a lot of the stories in the book. I knew sort of shorthand of them. You know, I knew the Harlem riots. I knew obviously the eulogy. I knew about Medgar Evers. I knew most of the stories. What was jarring about the book was putting them in chronological order. Right. So I and not even just order, just like how close they were to each other. So I knew that my dad had been in the Harlem riots. Obviously, I knew about Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner. What I hadn't realized till we started working out actual dates was that in between Goodman, Cheney, and Schwerner going missing and the funeral, he goes to Harlem and experiences the Harlem riots. So we had not put that together. So the proximity of these events to one another was really, really jarring. This idea that like on 1 week, this thing will happen. And then a week later, this like really gripping thing that or terrifying thing that I didn't realize it happened was happening. Right. So there was a lot of that. Also, just actually really thinking about how young he was. You know, when you think about your parents, you think about them like always being old, you know, in some way in your head. And so when you think about this dude is 21, 22 years old through most of this book. It's like really, and at that time I was writing, I was like 34, 35, something like that. It really puts you in a place where it's like, well, this dude is way younger than me going through all this.
No, for sure. So I guess that gets into my next question. Did you ever feel like or see glimpses of yourself in your father's story?
That's a good question. I don't know if I did see those things. I thought about where I was at 21 and 22 and thinking about how that felt like in some ways impossible to be doing that. I felt like I wasn't in any way ready to do the things that he was doing, which I guess everybody would have felt. You know, I'm sure they look at that point, we're looking back at the people before them and thinking like, wow, I couldn't have done that at that age. So I guess deep down you could have, but that was me. I never could have imagined myself doing that stuff at that age.
Look, I totally understand. Same. How young they were for sure. And so in the book, you include these four letters written by mm-hmm. you. Dad. Can you talk about like just incorporating those letters? What led you to decide to include those?
Yeah, so I'd really wanted to do a straightforward book about my dad's story. I didn't want to be in the book. I don't want to have my voices in there at all. But I was really pushed to. People said, hey, you know, you have something to say. And I really didn't feel like I did. So people wanted me to put essays in there and I did not, they just didn't work. I didn't know how to write essays about them. So, and part of it was that I felt like I had people who were going to be in my business. Like, I just felt like I was explaining this to people who were like, weren't, you know, just like the outside folks. And I felt like if I'm talking to outside folks about my dad, it just doesn't work the same. So I wanted to cut through the middleman and just write directly to him. And you know, just to get it out. And we ended up, doing those, and we kind of liked them. We just said, let's just keep them in.
No, I think that was a really dope and powerful addition for sure. And so a portion or a big chunk probably of the book you researched and written, it was written during the chaotic 2020. And so can you talk about what was it like writing and conducting this research about the civil rights movement, about your father's story during not only the pandemic, but then also the contemporary Black Lives Matter movement? And then also, like, did this experience shape your understanding of both of the movements or just social movements more broadly?
Yeah, so it really was difficult just logistically to talk to an elder man about, like, on Zoom, you know, just like logistics of doing that. You were there, you had professors and you had stuff with people who were trying to figure out Zoom. So that was tough. And then also, you know, not being there for him while he was going through this stuff and just having to be on a camera and talking to him about the things he was going through. In terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, it was, you know, I was writing about Medgar Evers and Fannie Lou Hamer as the George Floyd stuff was happening. So that became really difficult because I had to, you know, look at the parallels and look at what was going on. And one of the things that became crystal clear in doing the book was that there's a lot of people who don't know where to begin in terms of, like, affecting change. And I felt like a lot of people in the book were feeling that way too. So it's okay, you know, and I wanted to sort of show them that it's, like, okay if you don't know what you're doing, just try to do something. That was why I try to include a lot of people in the book who you don't necessarily immediately think of as, like, quote unquote, heroic figures.
Oh, thank you for that. And so another thing that I wanted to, highlight is that how the book kind of sheds light on the fear that a lot of people within the movement face. So this constant threat of violence, similar to that of, like, the fear experience in warfare. And so could you elaborate on just those parallels between the experiences of the civil rights activists, but then also, you know, military warfare, particularly regarding, like, trauma?
Yeah, I mean, it was a war. Civil rights movement was a war. And actually, I would posit that it was worse than a war in a lot of ways. And the fact that, you know, you go and fight in another country, right? You go to your base, right? They're not really often attacking these bases and, you know, doing all that stuff. You have, like, a space that you go to at night, you sleep and know that that's happening. Here, you are actually embedded with the enemy, right? Like Medgar Evers was shot in his front door, right? So there was no space to be like, okay, I'm clocking out for the night, I'm done, right? Also, you do these tours in war. You go 3 months, 6 months, something like that, 18 months total. You are in civil rights movement from, you know, my dad was in Mississippi in, what, 62, and then, you know, leaves Louisiana in 68, right? And so there's no break. You know, it's nonstop embedded in this war zone. And both of these things that they share in common is that there is the PTSD of knowing that your life is in danger at any moment of that time, right? And that's really the stuff that lingers, right? The stuff about my dad not being able to sleep because he's worried about footsteps creaking on the wooden floors, or the story he tells about a colleague who would jump under the table during 4th of July. Like, these are things that we see in with veterans also. So there was no, to me, this was a war, but the people who survived it don't get treated as veterans or heroes.
Right. And that's a very important point and something that the book, I think, touches on really well. And so also my next question, while conducting your research, so you mentioned linking up with like other children of the movement, like Barbara Hicks Collins, whose parents were close to your dad. Have you had conversations with other children of the movement? And then if so, like, what were those conversations like? And I'm also curious to know if you guys shared, like, similar experiences, or were you guys' experiences just, you know, unique?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of kids in the movement, and it's a lot of the same. You know, like luckily, my dad and I's story is a good story. Some people have had like really traumatic situations with their parents because their parents are still dealing with this thing. A lot of them, their parents are not here anymore. And a lot of that's because of the damage to their bodies and the things that they had to deal with and the struggles that they had. So all of that is a part of it. Yeah. So I have friends who are movement babies, and I have people that we've all talked about, and we've tried to sort of find our way through all this.
Thank you. So, what was your father's reaction to reading the book?
He liked it. You know, he liked it. The letters were tough for him to read, but I think he's really sort of proud of it. He's glad his story is out there. He's talked to, you know, the people that come to us and say that this has really helped my relationship with my dad or my grandfather or my son, or even, you know, made me go ask people questions. Like that's sort of been the rewarding part. But I think he likes it for the most part.
Nice, Luke. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
And so, how's your father's story impacted your own perception of yourself, activism, and then what personal growth have you possibly experienced from your father's narrative and vice versa?
I mean, for personal growth, I mean, it has allowed me to be a better communicator with my dad, with my parents, and my kids. You know, like that's the thing. It's helped me sort of understand that, you know, you are not going to be a perfect parent. You're going to make mistakes, but giving the kids the space to voice their opinions about those and sort of reckon with it and come together, I think is the beautiful part. So that's something that that has really come out of this book. It's one thing I learned about myself is that, you know, I want to be the type of parent that allows my kid. I want to have the relationship where my kids are not, you know, telling me these things when they're 35. You know, like we could do this now, and you know, have those spaces. Which and also like have kids who have the emotional intelligence to recognize these things before. 'Cause I didn't, you know, I didn't have the language. I didn't understand it. And so like now having that is something that I want to have with them.
Oh no, that's beautiful. That's amazing. And then, what do you hope readers take away from your book?
I hope that they take away that they can do something, you know. One of them, as I mentioned, one of the important things is including every different type of person in movement work, right? Flawed people, people we consider heroes, people who were struggling with their own place in the movement, they did something. And so when you look at the world, you look at pandemic, you look at, you know, politics, global warming, whatever your passion is, it feels like it's too big for you to deal with, right? And so to be in a space where you can feel like, okay, I can do something and that can like impact the world, I think is like the thing that I want people to take away from. And I want them to also like, just on a very just like base level, I want them to say, hey, let me ask my mom or dad or grandparents about their lives. And that'll, you know, take you far in your personal relationship, but understanding like where you are in the world, right? To know that like I come from that, like my thing has always been like if you have an older person and a Black person in your life, they've done something to like get us all free, right? Whether it is being like the first Black person in their union or like, you know, teaching at this school, like they did something, right? And so just to ask them that question, a lot of times they downplay it, right? They say, well, I was just did this thing, I wasn't thinking about it, but it's important. It's important whether it's part of your local community or whatever, they did something. And so I'm asking those questions and seeing what they did to like see where you fit in and where you come from, I think is an important thing that we all should have. And I hope they get that from the book.
Thank you so much for that. No, I love it. And so what projects are you currently working on?
Doing a lot of TV, doing TV, trying to figure out what book two looks like right now. Those are the big things. A lot of TV, a lot of figuring out those things, figuring out podcasting things and all that. So, you know, different things I'm working on. So that was very vague, but yeah.
Nice. Well, look, we're looking forward to seeing what you roll out next. Well, David, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.